I'm Rebecca Blacksmith here on the Leader Spot with the chairman and CEO of Amulet Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Craig Liddell. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's good to be here.
Now, Amulet is a privately held life sciences company in Rockville, Maryland. It was founded in 2001 by a leading doctor in nitric oxide-based therapeutics. Explain what that is.
What that is? That's a great question. Actually, in 1992, the molecule nitric oxide was actually nominated as the molecule of the year by Science magazine. And preceding that, there was a Nobel Prize awarded for the discovery of its roles in biology. Now, any of us that have perhaps come out of high school and science over the last 25 or 30 years have really associated nitric oxide with pollution, air pollution in Los Angeles and other places. So for probably 40 or 50 years, we all thought of it as a bad molecule, toxic and smelly and awful. But through the 70s and then into the 90s, as I mentioned, scientists in the biomedical arena realized and discovered that it actually is a very important molecule in the human body. So when Dr. Riley founded Amulet Pharmaceuticals in 2001, he was really starting off a very new enterprise to commercialize and develop drugs around that new opportunity.
And the goal is now to develop products in the areas of diabetes, pain, ophthalmology, wound, and contact lens care. So you're using this.
Correct. And gastrointestinal diseases. Yeah, because nitric oxide can play roles in all sorts of different areas, as you just mentioned. And we have to focus, of course, as a small company to raise money. So our main focus at the moment are areas like gastrointestinal disease. But we can move, as you mentioned, into ophthalmology, cardiovascular, other areas also. That's correct.
Yeah. And your goal as a company is to partner with medical device and pharmaceutical companies.
Correct.
Now.
Correct, yeah. I mean, the biotech business model is a very straightforward business model in a sense. You come across some intellectual property like Amulet owns and develop it in a fashion that says that it's interesting to a pharmaceutical company or to a device company. And then at a certain point, you sell it off to them to raise cash. In our case, we could do this multiple times. So there's a business model there that says we're licensing out to the major companies over time. Of course, if we hit on a big one and it looks very interesting and we sell the entire company, you know, at the right price, that's a fine outcome also. It's not likely that we will develop into a fully integrated pharmaceutical company on our own. I think it's very likely we'll go through an M&A in the next 5 to 7 years.
Now, and what point did nitric oxide become apparent to you? You have a PhD, so...
Actually, it was in as early as 1992 when the company NitroMed was founded in Boston, and that's an entirely interesting story on its own also. And as a scientist, I was interested that this small little molecule, nitric oxide, could be so important in medicine, and actually so important as to create a biotechnology company all on the basis of nitric oxide. And that happened in 1992. So that was the first time I was aware of it. What happened more recently is that I came personally through a couple of other biotech companies. One was Paradigm Genetics in the Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, and then had come up here to help start another small pharmaceutical company known as Artesian Therapeutics that was sold to Cardiome Pharmaceuticals in Toronto, or at least into Canada, in 2005. So I was looking around for an opportunity, and I found Amulet in 2005. And I think that was the time when my business instincts and my interest in nitric oxide, or at least my nascent interest in nitric oxide, came together. And I saw that Amulet had some very, very compelling intellectual property. So that's what really got my interest in the company.
So it was the science side that motivated you, or the business, both, or the business
side?
The
fact that the two came together, yes. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be hard for me to run a software company or to run a car dealership. I think I would be running a science company. But here was a situation where an interesting molecule like nitric oxide and the intellectual property around it presented itself at a time when I thought the business opportunity was there as well. One thing that seems to be true in the biotech world is that it takes around 20 years from a Nobel Prize or a big announcement of a discovery in cancer or whatever. It takes around 20 years from that point to when a drug actually comes on the market. And if you think that 1992 is sort of the time that nitric oxide had its time in the limelight, then you would say the first drug would come out in 2012. And in fact, our timeline has our first lead molecule coming out in 2012. So there is a very long time, lead time in drug development. And that's one of the reasons it takes so long to get these businesses put together.
Why is that? Is it because there's such a negative effect if it's wrong?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration is really charged with protecting the safety of the population. So they're really charged with looking at how safe these drugs are, and is there a good balance between safety and efficacy? Do they work, but work so well that we'll tolerate a few side effects, or are they so dangerous that we should not approve them? And these tests take a long time. Some of them are very expensive. I mean, the estimates range up to $800 million for a drug to get to market. So if you think about it, even if it's not that much money, the drug has to make a lot of money to return that money to their investors. And this is one of the reasons why the pharmaceutical industry is struggling at the moment, because the big companies require very big drugs to keep their coffers full. And it's not so easy to do. For us, we're a small company. We are probably 8 employees at the moment. We've raised, I think we'll be closing on about $4 million in A-series capital here in the next few weeks. We are out looking for additional investment to take our gastroparesis therapeutic through the FDA testing. And so we're basically on a B-series raise at the moment for $30 to $35 million. And, those dollars will keep us going probably till 2012 or 2013. Obviously we're a smaller player in the pond. But our business model, as I mentioned earlier, really is to take that opportunity to a major pharmaceutical company in 2012, and we'll sell the asset or we'll sell the entire company at that point.
Has that been kind of a key function of you being the CEO in
That's
terms
right.
of basically you spend most of your days raising capital?
Raising money, keeping customers, the end buyers of the product apprised of what we're doing. That's right. Yeah.
And the timeline for Amulet Pharmaceuticals, and we're speaking with the chairman and CEO, Dr. Craig Liddell, was that it was founded in 2001, developed a product, began licensing the Nortec application in 2004, and then at some point, started mm-hmm. really raising money in 2006. Mm-hmm. Now, explain this Nortec application.
Right. That's just our brand name for a nitric oxide delivery technology. So really the key thing with nitric oxide is that it is a very, very small molecule. It is extremely active in the body. And it doesn't live for very long. The molecule itself reacts very quickly, so it's only around for a few seconds. That means if you and the body uses nitric oxide in many different areas, as we talked about earlier. But if you think about using it as a therapeutic, you have to be able to deliver nitric oxide in the right way, at the right place, at the right time. And so the Nortec technology really is a chemical way of being able to do that. And if you look at the timeline of the company. Basically, Dr. Riley founded the company in 2001. He began developing the intellectual property at that time, and the initial patents were filed in 2004. And so when I came into the company in late 2005, what we were doing, we were in the process of prosecuting those patents at that time, and actually we added additional patents to the portfolio at that time. So it's a fairly typical biotech timeline in that the scientist founder kind of jumps out of NIH or somewhere, begins to fund or run the company, and then at some point, the whole intellectual property package starts to look compelling, and then a professional CEO comes in to raise equity capital, which is what I did in early 2006, and our first close on our A-series was in the middle of 2006. So we've done 2 closes on our A-series.
What do you think the key is to being a leader in managing a company where intellectual property is the key?
I think attention to detail is really absolutely critical, which means you have to have some sort of technical or scientific background to do this in a scientific company, at least. I think that's kind of a critical must-have. I think the other piece, of course, is the ability to inspire people and maintain people's loyalty and interest in what it is that you're trying to achieve, which means clarity of message is important. Clarity of objectives is important. Having that combination, I think, is probably the key to success. Obviously, the market conditions and the capital market conditions are going to play into that. But those are what they are. And if you don't have the attention to detail and the persistence to kind of keep that attention to detail and the ability to inspire people and lead them, I think, that does give you, that does present challenges over time. I have also seen how flexibility is important. I mean, you've talked about so many different areas that we could play in, and we've talked about them. We've You know, we've certainly played in the cardiovascular space for some time. We had a grant from the NIH to develop a self-disinfecting contact lens case at one time. Now we're doing gastroparesis, which is a very significant unmet need, a women's health problem for diabetic women mostly. And I think, you know, flexibility to be able to present a compelling story in such divergent areas is important when you're trying to commercialize intellectual property such as this. And I think our overall goals have been to take that base intellectual property that was developed in 04 and commercialize that into the highest value markets that we could find. So, to your question on leadership, I think being connected into the community, financial community as well as the end buyer community, is also a critical piece of this. Is, you know, you have to be able to walk into Pfizer or Glaxo and be a credible representative of the company and the technology to be able to make this go forward as well.
Now, you said kind of flexibility around commercializing it into the highest value market you can find. Was that preset before you joined a few years ago, or did you take an active role in determining where some of those markets could be, or you and your team?
Yeah, I think the opportunistic nature of our business is kind of a hallmark of the biotech industry as well. I think, you know, I certainly was leading the push into gastroparesis. And I think, one interesting little anecdote there is that we actually did have a phase one small business grant from NIH to develop a self-disinfecting contact lens case that was funded in 03 or 04. And interestingly enough, both Bausch and Lomb and American Medical Optics had a disinfection solution removed from the market in 04 and 05 or 06 and 05 and 06. So, they contacted us and wondered if we had a self-disinfecting contact lens case because of the grant. Now, that's a reasonable thing to think, but of course we were only in phase one. We really only had the basic technology and we didn't have a finished product, so it was hard to get traction with those companies at that time. But Dr. Dick Gillis at Georgetown University was also developing models to look at metabolic diseases such as gastroparesis. So although this isn't quite true, you can certainly think about it that really when he came to the idea that we could use our technology to treat gastroparesis, and this was really a sort of a bright idea at the time, we actually gave him some of our contact lens material to feed to the rats, and we treated gastroparesis. So that was a sort of a synergistic shift that happened very quickly. And, you know, you've got to be ready to take advantage of those opportunities. It takes having the right people in the right place at the right time with, you know, the right technology to make it happen. And so that was an opportunity that I really pursued once we saw that there was something there.
So part of it's vision, flexibility, and, opportunity.
Being able to really solidly take advantage of opportunities that are out there and understand, you know, it's as I was saying earlier, it's being connected enough into the community to contact people that really know that gastroparesis, for example, is a market opportunity, is a significant unmet medical need, and that if you have a therapeutic to treat it, that would be a very high-value play. And have the understanding also from the science side that we do have something that can treat that. So putting that package together is a key, I think that's a key differentiating point from the leadership perspective. Yeah.
We're speaking with the chairman and CEO of Amulet Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Craig Liddell. Craig, when we return, we're going to continue our conversation. I want to get into a couple things. First of all, you have a track record of creating companies, so we're going to talk about a few of those. And you led an IPO, raised capital. We talked a little bit about that, $4 million currently. So we're going to continue our conversation talking about some of those things in your leadership story. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith. I'm your host of The Leader Spot, and I want to thank some of the businesses who have invested in leadership here on The Leader Spot. Hotel sponsor, the Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs for corporate customers. Also, thanks to Vangent, as well as to Dennis Cole Architects for sponsoring The Leader Spot and investing in leadership. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, here with you each week, talking with CEOs from across the Washington, D.C. area about their leadership stories so that you can be better leaders in your different business sectors. Whether it's you're on a management team or you're a CEO or you want to be a CEO, these stories will help you make better leadership decisions, whether it be raising capital or maybe it's doing a merger. All that each week here on The Leader Spot. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith, returning with Dr. Craig Liddell after this. Back here in the Leader Spot, I'm Rebecca Blacksmith, back in studio with the chairman and CEO of Amulet Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Craig Liddell. Craig, we were talking before about a rat's story, mm-hmm. which is something we haven't previously talked about on the Leader Spot. I don't think feeding rats has ever been a subject. But
we're breaking new ground today. Sure.
But let's continue with that story, because that ended up really turning out for you as
right.
a company.
Right. I mean, I guess the important point here is that in the drug business, the FDA doesn't look kindly on treating people with drugs that are not demonstrated to be safe or efficacious. So they prefer you to treat rats and mice and things. So that's why we do this. But no, it was a very interesting story because, as I mentioned, we had received an NIH grant to develop a self-disinfecting contact lens with our technology. And Dr. Dick Gillis, who works at Georgetown University Medical Center, came up with the idea that that same material may treat a very significant women's health problem known as gastroparesis, which is a problem with the stomach, essentially a very sort of slow or non-functioning stomach in diabetic women and in other situations. So he tried the test in diabetic rats, and it worked. So to fast forward, those data actually we submitted to the NIH to get a phase one SBIR to prove the thesis that in fact our technology, can treat gastroparesis. And those results we've been generating over the last year, and they've worked very well. So that's actually why the focus of the company now is on raising a Series B to commercialize that product. I think, this is an important leadership story in that, a life sciences company like Amulet really has to build on its opportunistically, as we discussed earlier, mm-hmm. has to build on its successes, and then as it does, it can layer more and more capital and more science on top of that to really drive the story home. We now have a phase two SBIR pending with the NIH in the same area, and that's for $7 million. So as you can see, the numbers are getting bigger, and it's because the story is getting stronger.
And raising capital is something that you've done in your past.
That's right.
Everything from you helped found another startup cardiovascular therapeutics company, and you helped raise capital for that, and then you
That's
sold
right.
that. That
right.
was a previous venture
That's
for you.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, I mean, money is, money is the key. If you think that, it can take up to $800 million to get a drug on the market, and, some drugs only make $500 million a year. So if you do the math, you realize that, you really need a fairly big drug to make a good return on your investment if it's an $800 million enterprise. So, the key to success here in biotechnology is really finding investors that understand the timelines and understand the value proposition, and then being able to build a good enough story to bring the capital in. There is a staging, though, and I think this is sort of implicit in the conversation we had a minute ago. You don't want to raise so much money early on that you basically overcapitalize the enterprise. obviously, too little capital is a problem as well, but you really try to do is bring in sufficient money to raise the valuation to the next step so that the cost of capital for the next iteration is cheaper for the company.
So there's a leadership angle there in even determining when to take money and
That's
when
right.
not to take
That's
money.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the general rule, of course, for entrepreneurs is take what you can when you can get it.
That's, but you don't always follow that.
But, well, let's put it this way. There are some money that you should take. There's some that you don't necessarily, you should not always take, depending on the situation. And so, yeah, there is certainly a time to think through exactly when you want the money and when you need it. That's right.
Now, you, speaking of money, you also wrote and won a grant for $23 million, which was the largest grant awarded by NIST.
That's correct. Yeah, this was the ATP program that has been on and off again a couple of times over the last few years. But at Paradigm Genetics, yeah, we successfully landed, I think it was a $22 million or $23 million grant to do data integration work. And that was a really a big success. The interesting thing about that is it played directly to one of the biggest problems in the healthcare industry today. And I think you and everybody is probably aware of the fact that, the federal government is looking to spend more money on healthcare than almost any other area over the next 25 years. Efficiency in that system is a critical need for the country. And that grant addressed, data integration and data sharing, HIPAA requirements and all those sorts of issues. So you can see that the NIST was maybe ahead of the curve a little bit in terms of understanding that was a great need area.
Now, Paradigm Genetics, you just mentioned in connection with that grant. Now, you assisted with an IPO for them in 2000.
Right. Yeah, Paradigm Genetics, I joined, actually, I was a tenured professor for many years and jumped into the biotech industry in 1997 when Paradigm Genetics was founded. So that was really my first foray in. And I joined as a member of the executive committee. So I was on the team that put it through an IPO in 2000. And then I started the healthcare division of Paradigm Genetics in 2000 that was sold ultimately to Clinical Data Systems in Boston in 2004. I left the company in 2002 to found Artesian Therapeutics with Peter Suzdak and Aaron Schacht and others from Oxford BioVentures in Boston. So that company we sold in 2005, and that brings us to
your current venture annually.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, is it the what phase do you enjoy the most? Is it the founding the company? Is it taking an idea to the next level? I mean, Amulet you didn't found,
right,
but you
right.
were able to take it to another
I
level.
I think what I like is finding a good idea that's already got some meat on the bones, but really taking it to the next level and moving it through the sale of the company. I think. You know, particularly for Artesian and Amulet. Artesian, for example, was founded on some intellectual property that had already had some legs on it because it had come from another source. And we did that there. I think Amulet is a similar story where there was some science behind the work, but there was really a need to push this to the market and get it out. And I think that's the growth phase that I enjoy the most. It's sort of getting attention, getting outside capital in for the first time, and taking it all the way through to M&A.
And you mentioned being a tenured professor previously.
Right.
That was being a scientist day in and day out. This
right.
is a little bit different.
This is different, but I think, you know, it comes to the point I made at the outset of the conversation. I think it's really, at least in a scientific business, and probably true in other business areas, technical business areas also, I think it's very important to understand at a gut level what it is you're doing. I know there are some outstanding leaders who come out of the finance industry and who can lead biotech companies. I know that's true. But I think it's also true that some of the most successful companies, from micro companies like ourselves to Pfizer, are often doing better when they're led by MDs or PhDs because there's a gut understanding of what it is you're doing. Now, that doesn't minimize the other leadership requirements that you need to have, and I think I've learned those on the job, basically, to this point. But I think it is important to come out of a really solid technical or scientific background.
Your employees, if you have a larger proportion of employees who are scientists as well, I would think you need that
right.
to gain respect.
Right.
I think it would be harder,
right.
although it's done.
It's done, and there are some outstanding people who can do it. I'm not taking away from those folks. But I think it is certainly easier to be able to sit in a company meeting and be able to understand what's being talked about and be able to maybe not add to it so much, but at least be able to ask those critical questions because... attention to detail is key. If you don't take opportunities quickly and capitalize on those opportunities quickly, as we've described with our gastroparesis opportunity, then you let good opportunities go by, or you may miss a key point that says that success is going to elude you in the future. So I think attention to that attention to detail is key. And in a science business, the detail is all scientific, so it helps to have a science background to be able to understand it.
We're speaking with the chairman and CEO of Amulet Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Craig Liddell. We've been talking a lot about money and raising capital, and I have a quote for you from Forbes, from P.T. Barnum. He said this, money is a terrible master, but an excellent servant. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess I do. If you think that the pharmaceutical industry at large last year spent $40 billion, that's with a B, by the way, and delivered only 7 drugs. You can say that there's an enormous amount of money out there, and obviously it's a challenging master, at least if it's generating only 7 drugs. Go back into the late 1980s and early 90s, the industry was delivering between 20 and 30 drugs a year. So I think the first part of that quote certainly seems true, that despite more and more money going into the industry, there are fewer and fewer drugs coming out. On the other hand, though, you know, if you can raise the capital and you know how to use it, as I do and as I'm trying to now with Amulet, I think the other part of the quote that talks about being an excellent servant says you can turn it to your needs very quickly, and it's critically important for you to be successful in your enterprise. So definitely, there's the two sides to money, that's for sure.
Now, and what is it about raising money that you really enjoy?
Oh, I think it's the fact that, money is raised on a handshake, and it's a handshake really between one person and another, and it's built on trust and integrity, really. It doesn't matter how great your story is, or whether you've got, the biggest blockbuster drug on your slate or not. I mean, what really it boils down to is it's a very personal thing, but it's a level of commitment. And I think what I enjoy about it is establishing those relationships and establishing that level of commitment with people in the industry who really are sharing the vision that I have to help, patients address some very serious unmet needs, like in gastroparesis, or help the healthcare industry itself, as in the grant from NIST, help the industry itself do its job better. So, yeah, that's the part that I like.
Now, when you say money is raised on a handshake and its integrity and et cetera, so are contracts not as meaningful in a way?
Well, no, contracts are sort of for lawyers and accountants. They're very important once you've done the deal because things don't always go the way you hope. There are always problems. I mean, there are certainly in the pharmaceutical industry, the one statistic that scares most people is that only 2% of the drugs that go into phase one testing actually end up as approved drugs. So if you think about it that way, what other industry could tolerate a 98% failure rate? Well, that's the pharmaceutical industry, and this is one of the reasons why it's so expensive. So if you think about that, it's important to have contracts so that when things go wrong, that people manage the breakdown effectively. But to get to the point of a contract, I think, is what I'm talking about. It's, you don't get a contract if you don't have the handshake and the integrity to get there.
Now, we've been enjoying your accent today on the Leader Spot. Where is that from?
I'm from Sydney.
Okay.
Been in the U.S. since, for 25 years or so. So I've been on the West Coast, been in North Carolina with Paradigm Genetics. Spent 7 or 8 years in New Mexico on the faculty at New Mexico State University. And then in D.C. since 2002. So,
well,
wonderful city, too.
Pleasure having you here. Thanks for being on the Leader Spot here with us today.
Appreciate that, Rebecca, and thanks for having me on.
Best of luck with Amulet Pharmaceuticals with your raising capital and
thank
your
you
new,
for that also.
Your more rat stories to
That's
you,
right. There will be a lot more rat stories. Yeah, if you want me back to talk about that, I'll be happy to come back. Yes.
The chairman and CEO of Amulet Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Craig Liddell, here with us on the Leader Spot. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, and I want to thank you for joining us on the Leader Spot. I want to thank our production team, Kathy, Jennifer, Chelsea, and Brenda. Makeup by Samantha Eibel, makeup artist to the Presidents. Theme music by Brad Miner. Hotel sponsor, the Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business room meeting needs. Thanks as well to Vangent and Dennis Cole Architects for sponsoring the Leader Spot, investing in leadership. If you're a business interested in reaching the business community and investing in leadership, please consider sponsoring the Leader Spot. Each week we provide for you interviews with CEOs about leadership from across the Washington, D.C. area. So if you'd like to reach a business audience with your message, you can contact the Leader Spot at theleaderspot.com. Details are on there. The interviews from today's show will be put up on theleaderspot.com. Scott, I want to thank him for podcasting this at theleaderspot.com as well, so you can listen to CEO interviews anytime you like. Well, I'm Rebecca Blacksmith, taking a seat with you each week at the Leader Spot. It's your seat.